This is the Invincible Podcast on TV Podcast Industries. We're back with Invincible Season 2, Episode 7. I'm not going anywhere.
I don't know the official number, but I think I'm about 98% machine.
How can you live with that?
I couldn't. I had them erase my memory. But that was a mistake. The two of you are helping me to see that now.
How?
Each time I died, each time I was put back together, it was because I helped make this world a little better. You did the same when you fought back against Sinclair, when you saved Invincible and William's lives. We're not our bodies. We're the decisions we make, the lives we change, the people we love. Or who love us. I don't need to forget that. And neither do you.
Welcome back, fellow Guardians, to the Invincible Podcast. We're chatting about the penultimate episode of Season 2, I'm Not Going Anywhere. I'm one of your hosts, Derek.
And rounding out the group of a duo, I am Chris.
Can you round out a duo?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a straight line, isn't it?
Yeah. hey, according to the Flat Earthers, everything is a straight line.
Yeah, they're not real, Chris. I just keep telling myself they're not real.
Well, they're not real. But
yeah, they don't exist. It must just all be some crazy joke, and they'll eventually go, oh, we didn't believe that at all. But yes, can you believe that we are at the penultimate episode of the second season of Invincible already, Chris?
No, and I don't want it to end.
Uh-huh.
This is one of these, like, no, can I go back to the 22 episodes season? Like, just, can we just give me more? The fact I know that, like, there's another, hour-ish of content, and then that's it. That's all we know about now.
Yeah.
Until whenever next year they release Season 3, I'm like, oh, that's too far.
At least they confirmed the renewal for Season 3. I was laughing during the week because we were halfway through the second part of the season. I know it's only two episodes, but halfway through the second part of the season, there was loads of news stories that were coming out from quite big sites that were going, Invincible has been confirmed for Season 3, as if it was a new announcement, but it was confirmed for Season 2 and 3 last year. Yes. But I think a lot of people may have forgotten, because so many shows get to the second season and then get cancelled. I think lots of the viewers may have forgotten that that Season 3 is already there, already been cast and recorded and ready to go, and they're still animating at the moment. But Season 3 is confirmed and probably will slot into the same slot next year for Season 3, I would expect, anyway. Not sure whether they'll break it up again the way they did this time with four-episode halves. I'm not sure about that, but I'm sure they have the schedule and they know when it's coming this time. Because obviously Invincible Season 2 was delayed because of COVID and because of the delayed renewal for the second season. But they should know when it's coming. But I think also what's playing into this, Chris, is of course we're covering The Bad Batch, which has 15-episode seasons, right? So every season of The Bad Batch goes on for quite a long time. It goes on for, 3 months, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. And part of me goes, it's nice when they just give us, this is my vision, this is what, and I'm like, yeah, no, I respect that. Mm-hmm. And there's other times I'm like, no, you service us, the audience. Give me more. Give me. Now, the only thing I can think of is maybe in June we'll get another stealth release. You and I have talked about it. Like, we got Adam Eve. So maybe they do another special, a different special. And it was like, maybe it'd be like San Diego, they'll drop it, or maybe LA Comic Con, or one of the kind of big ones during the summer. They'll just go,
yeah.
Or New York in October. Poof, there's your.
Yeah, I think New York's the likely one. That's what happened with Adam Eve. I think it came out around October last year, just a couple of weeks before season two of Invincible began. And just the other thing I would always remind you is Prime Video will be boys focused throughout the summer because it starts on June 6th.
Correct. So October.
So I'd say they'd do their 8 weeks of The Boys and then maybe release an Invincible thing just after that. So keep it going for the year, huh?
Exactly. But speaking of keeping it going.
Yes, let's get into our discussion about Invincible Season 2, Episode 7. I'm not going anywhere. Of course, the show is created by Robert Kirkman, Corey Walker, and Ryan Ottley. This episode was written by Simon Ricciopa. This is his fourth episode of Invincible. Old Simon, he's been heavily involved in the show for since it began.
A quarter of nearly all the episodes.
Well, exactly. The episode was directed by Ian Abando, who directed episode 2 of this season, which was the wonderfully named In About 6 Hours, I Lose My Virginity to a Fish. Interestingly, we talked about the writer of that episode, Matt Lambert, because he wrote an episode of Shogun, which we're also covering on the podcast here. So
yes, you are. Yeah. And I hear good things. I hear very good things from both you and everyone else in the world.
It is without doubt the best thing we've covered since our wonderful time on Watchmen and Lovecraft Country. Excellent. It is top quality show. If you're not watching it, go watch it. We're 6 episodes into that of 10. So definitely go watch it. It's an epic show. Really, really good. And really subverts your expectations every week, kind of like Invincible does. You expect it to go one way and it goes completely the opposite. It's really, really good. Great characters, great writing as well. So go check it out, Chris, while we're watching.
I will.
Absolutely. Do you want to tell us what they gave us with your synopsis for this episode?
Sure. Mark is called away from his Comic-Con date with Amber to help out Rex Blode. Rex has gone on a solo mission to take out a nightmare tentacle monster called Octoboss. Invincible helps, but Rex does discover his new hand has a powerful gun inside, and he's able to take out Octoboss by himself. To repay Mark for his help, Rex agrees that he and the Guardians of the Globe will cover him for one day and one night, so he and Amber can get that full date they need. But after spending a full day together, a Vulturemite, Anissa, threatens Amber's life to draw out Invincible. She tries to reason with Mark about how many lives would be saved if he allows the Vulturem Empire to take over Earth as planned. When Mark refuses, she easily beats him and threatens that if he doesn't fall in line, another will come for him as she leaves Earth. Meanwhile, in Upstate University, William's boyfriend Rick is having nightmares about being turned into Reanimate again. Concerned that he's going to kill himself, William quickly calls Donald for help. Donald reveals to Rick that he was also rebuilt many, many times by the GDA after he died, and has lost some humanity each time. He realizes that asking the GDA to wipe his mind was the wrong choice, because he missed out on what makes life worth living. Out in space, Anissa returns to her Vulturem ship and reports to General Krieg. They discover Alan the alien, and he and Anissa fight. Alan learns he's much stronger than he thought, but allows Anissa to capture him so he can be taken to the Vulturemite's prison. Realizing that while she's in a relationship with Mark, Amber's own life will never matter, she and Mark break up. After leaving Amber for the final time, Mark gets a call from Angstrom Levy, who has his mother and brother captive while he waits for Mark to return home.
Excellent. An emotional little episode, this one.
Yeah. It got to the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That ending as well made you really kind of go, oh, it's just because especially just sitting there while he's essentially, we've all had that I've been dumped or just had to dump someone
mm-hmm.
emotional sit down staring into the distance.
Yeah.
If you haven't, you haven't really lived.
It's a great experience that everybody should go through, isn't it?
Exactly. But seeing how Mark, how they portrayed this in animated form is beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's start with one of the emotional moments for our points for the episode. Let's start out with Rick's Reanimate nightmare. This is quite a serious look at what Rick's gone through. We talked about it a little bit last week because we only just saw the reintroduction of Rick. He'd been turned into Reanimate by D.A. Sinclair back in season 1 and then suddenly had turned back up, fully cured, fully taken care of by the GDA. And here he is having kind of flashbacks to, I suppose, the terror of being kidnapped by D.A. Sinclair and nobody being able to save him while he was experimented on and turned into Reanimate. And in the nightmare, Sinclair is telling him, nobody's coming for you. I'm going to do this all over again.
Yeah. And that, like, you can imagine that that's what it's going to be like. Every horror film where the mad scientist is slowly peeling apart the crazies. They even did this in, like, Zack Snyder's Justice League, where they had Cyborg waking up during his transformation by his dad, like.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's a body horror go-to mm-hmm. in that, where you, like, you have the person who's slowly being, losing their humanity, losing their organic life mm-hmm. To the mad scientist with no power or thing, especially in a nightmare where it's not real, but yeah. it feels real.
Absolutely. In the case of Rick, you know, he was turned into a monster to attack his boyfriend and attack other people on the premises of the school, completely out of his control. It wasn't like what happened in the example of Cyborg, where that was his father trying to save him. You know, it's a different situation. So Rick tries to kill himself. And William makes the call to bring in Donald to help him out. Donald's been going through his own questioning of what's happening. We see him talk to Cecil about it and try and get some information from Cecil as to why his mind keeps getting wiped. And it's revealed to him that he's the one that asks the GDA to bring him back, and he's the one that asks the GDA to wipe his mind each time after he's died, saving the world, because he believes that this is the only way that he's going to be able to continually do that job. And here he is now, he has to be brought in to talk Rick down.
Yeah. And that it's a fun parallel. Mm. Like, I know we joked about him, I think you joked kind of best that he's Coulson.
Mm-hmm. He's Phil Coulson, without a doubt.
From the MCU, from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., mm-hmm. original The Avengers and Thor and all those fun ones.
Yeah.
That, Agent Coulson. And it's fun to kind of play at that. Well, hold on, he's been sacrificing his life because he's powerless. He's not a mm-hmm. he is not a one of the superheroes.
Yeah,
technically you could argue he is now,
kind of,
because he is more machine than man.
Uh-huh. 98%, I believe, is the number yes. he gives. He doesn't know exactly, but 98% apparently. Yeah.
And he's done it 39 times.
Mm.
That's the interesting thing. Like, he has decided to, in order to continue doing what he has to do,
mm-hmm.
knowing that he giving his life to do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
so because he doesn't want to remember all the other times he's lost his life. It's an interesting kind of tweak. And then what you see here is him coming to the realization that he shouldn't be wiping his memory and sharing that with William's boyfriend, Rick, because he's saying that, like, yeah, in order to continue and have that humanity aspect, you need to remember what you nearly did or what you did do.
Yeah.
And what you've become.
Yeah.
Or got past, I think.
Growth. And I really, I love how this worked, because William's calling in Donald to help him save Rick. And actually, as you hear through the conversation, Donald's actually being saved by having the conversation. You hear Donald going, "You're the ones that are saving me. I'm realizing what I'm missing out on is I'm actually here to be with the people that I love and the people that love me. I'm not just here to run out and save the world and die over and over and over again. I also should be keeping my humanity to myself." And because he does that, he's able to get Rick off the ledge and bring him back to William. So it's really interesting that that's the way they did it. So it's like Donald didn't go in with a plan of how to save Rick, but by having that conversation and by listening to the two of them and their love, he's able to save himself and save Rick at the same time, which I just thought was a really well-written moment.
You hit the nail on the head there. Like, this episode, but particular, and a number of the key scenes are mm-hmm. just like, you could see these in an Oscar-worthy film. You put in Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal or Ryan Gosling,
mm-hmm.
and you've got yourself an award-winning motion picture.
Absolutely.
Right here. Same dialogue, same scene.
Yeah.
And it's just the fact, now it's an animated thing. It's just the writing in this scene particular, mm-hmm. just, it's that emotion. And I think we talked about all the way back at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
How, what this show does is there's that amazing scene in Karma Police where they had the music just going
mm-hmm.
and they just had Invincible flying, and they probably just wrote kind of feeling poorly and just kind of mm-hmm. like storyboarded out this just kind of down, depressed, and that's what this is. It's just putting to screen like emotions,
yeah.
just every, it's like, and again, it's me kind of eulogizing this to myself and to the, an audience who are already behind it. But yeah. I'm just like, I was amazed by this scene anyway.
Yeah, well, it was really, really good. You're totally right. Just to have that moment between these characters who can all be side characters. You know, they're not often focused on. But that resolving Donald's side of things, I guess, is also really important to the story of Invincible as well. One interesting thing to note, which I'm not sure if everybody would have caught because it's not really called out, but later on in the episode, we see Cecil trying to call in all the help he can possibly get to save the Earth from the attack that's going on. And he happens to call in one D.A. Sinclair to find out where his Reanimon army is. Does he have any of them that are ready for work? So D.A. Sinclair is fully working for the GDA now. Maybe under duress, maybe as punishment for what he did on the college, but that's quite interesting that D.A. Sinclair is in the background since he's the one that turned Rick into Reanimon.
I don't remember if they showed this earlier in the season, like season one, or this was me just having knowledge from comic books.
Right.
So this is the thing. So yes, D.A. Sinclair is working for the GDA, and his whole thing is using dead military people, turning them into Reanimon. For, like, basically, if you're an army man, you're serving in the forces and then you die in the line of duty, they'll turn you into Reanimon. And the whole thing is Cecil turns around to D.A. Sinclair and goes, hey, you want to do this, we will let you do this if you do it for the good of people and man. And off the books, and to people that sign up to it, kind of thing.
Right.
That's what I remember from the comic books. I was like, I'm pretty sure there was a scene.
I feel like there was something, whether it was just a post credit or.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen more than one Reanimon. It's not just Rick. But I suppose it's just interesting they had the two of them in this episode when Rick is having nightmares that D.A. Sinclair is going to kidnap him again. So definitely worth highlighting, at least, even if we had seen him before. It's worth highlighting that he's there in the GDA with Rick, worried about the fact that he could be kidnapped again. So, yeah. Let's go on to our second point for the episode, which is the big central point of the episode, really. Mark's day off, right? So we start out at Comic-Con, where he's going off on his date with Amber. Seems to be going really well. She's really happy to spend any time that she can with him. And she's, as she says, she probably reads more comics than he does now, since he spends loads of time in space. Hard to get your pull list from your comic store if you're out in space. Sure. So she's perfectly happy to be there. But there's some great touches in this scene at Comic-Con. I really enjoyed this, where they're discussing away about spending time together, and then suddenly she realizes that they're in a queue for an autograph of one of the comic book writers that Mark wants to go and meet. I really liked that. I thought that was that's something that I've definitely seen happen, and I've definitely probably done as well, ushered someone into a queue when they're not realizing that's what's happening.
I personally, in this scene, directly just loved the conversation between the writer of Seance Dog and Mark.
Yes, absolutely.
I can only assume it was like Ryan Otley or Robert Kirkman themselves kind of making this, like writing the spit out, and just kind of like, well, we're going to tell you how we cut corners making the show. Absolutely. So like, you just do it from behind so you don't have to see their mouth moving or things like that. And I was like, it was very fun to go, oh, I really want to go back to see how many times they've done that now.
Absolutely.
I don't think they have.
And I love that that's exactly what Mark says as well. He goes, oh, I'm going to watch season two much closer next time. He's talking about season two of Seance Dog, the cartoon series that happens in this world. But of course, the animators at least are talking about this episode of Invincible and this season of Invincible. So it's basically that the whole concept from the writer Philip Schaff is that they cut corners so that they can do massive fight scenes. They can do amazing big budget scenes, things that take weeks to work on, by doing small things like one panel being panned over by the camera so it makes it look like there's movement, even though there isn't, which I liked. Also love the joke about they sometimes spend a little bit too much time on that one panel, so suddenly it looks like a completely different animated show. And then they have cut to Mark, and he looks like he's in an anime show. So that was really good.
Yeah, it was a fun little gag.
Great fun conversation. But of course, this always happens. Their date is cut short because Mark has to be called in to help out once again. He has to go and help out Rex because he has gone missing. One tiny little touch that's in the background that I want to call out is he gets called by Adam Eve, who is actually finally dealing with what happened way back at the start of the series. She's dealing with, once again, Killcannon, who escaped last time and almost killed loads of civilians. So just in a quick cutaway, we see that she's dealing with Killcannon again, which I thought was, again, a nice little touch.
Yeah, it was a fun one. Like, she hasn't fully hogtied, as he should be. But yeah, it's a fun one.
Yeah, just wrapping up a side story from earlier on in the season, the thing that made her move back in with her parents, basically. And here she is on her own side mission, taking care of Killcannon once again.
And, like, you can only assume that it is going to be, like, that's it. Like, that's just how we're going to tie up that loose end. Mm-hmm. And people ever go, but they never tie. It's like, well, actually.
Actually, there was this 2-second call that she made. But let's get on to Rex and Octoboss.
Oh, I love this.
Now I'm pain, you hear?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's the perfect pairing of just idiot cephalopod and idiot superhero. But both are not idiots. And then just kind of like seeing Rex kind of really just take one. Like, he takes a beating, especially towards the beginning. And then going, oh, I didn't know about this massive cannon in my new arm now.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Which helps him take out Octoboss. Yeah. I don't know why, but when I watched it the first time, I was like, how did he not know that he had a gun inside his hand? I completely forgot that he got a replacement hand. That was that was the whole discussion that they had. But of course, they're going to give him upgrades. It's the GDA, right? So
exactly.
So that was kind of cool to have that come out. But I have to say, that conversation, and obviously referencing it there with the now I'm paying you here. That conversation between Rex, where he starts to criticize Octoboss about how terrible he is at speaking English, and Octoboss goes, I just learned your English language. I'm sorry if I can't speak it as well as you did, but I only just learned it, kind of thing. I thought that was just a good little joke between the two of them, and Rex kind of going, oh, I never really thought about that. And Octoboss's wonderful line following up with, who am ass kicked now?
He's Yoda. I like that, even though, like, even with this continuation, because just when they even start to get into the next part where Mark arrives and is going after you, Mark's like, do you want me to deal with this? And like, no, you go with minions. I got this.
Yeah.
And the minions are like four tiny squiggly kind of guys. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, Mark is just going to destroy them.
Exactly. Exactly. And Rex just wants to prove to himself that he's still capable of doing it, I guess. You know, that's the whole underlying thing with Rex at the moment is, you know, he was the one that was there when Duplicate died. You know, he almost lost Shrinking Ray as well. And he was completely unable to defeat everybody and stop that from happening. He also got a bullet in the brain. And just about took out the rest of the Serpent Society. So here he is trying to make sure that he's not useless, that he is an active member of the Guardians of the Globe, wants to go out and be the one to take out this big boss, effectively. So so I thought that was really important. And then he offers to give Mark a day off, which kind of leads to everything else that happens in the episode. He's told him, turn off your phone, take your earpiece out. Nobody's going to be monitoring. And if any calls come in from Cecil, he'll get us and we'll take care of whatever issue it could possibly be. But forgets that, of course, Viltrumites are going to arrive at some point, and here they are.
Yeah, I was wondering when they were going to take this kind of thread back, if that makes sense. And they do, and they go hard. Wait, I don't want to say that they go hard on this thread, but like, you have this nice conversation, and it actually takes me a split second as well to figure what's out. You have Mark and Amber having this really nice conversation, and then everything just freezes.
Yes.
And I was like, wait, what? And then you get the realization that there's someone there with her hand around Amber's neck.
Yeah.
It is that Vulturemite, and she's like, we need to have this discussion now. Such an interesting thing, because it's just, no, you would freeze. Everything would just freeze. The whole world just stops for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really interesting choice and direction there in terms of, no, this is how the rest of the world was going to act.
Yeah.
And it's because Anissa is a Vulturemite warrior. She's like, everyone has seen what happened the last time a Vulturemite was there in that city. So It was just an interesting piece I wanted to go where they actually froze everything for a split second.
Yeah, absolutely. I think after the whole date that we saw between Mark and Amber, where everything's going so well and they've had their problems coming up to this point, where Amber's kind of worried about how she's able to be the partner of Invincible, everything seems to be working out. Everything, they've kind of worked a strategy. Mark's going to get a couple of days off a week. So they're going to be able to have a normal life alongside him being a superhero. But it's not just phone calls that he gets to come out for major emergencies. It's not like he works for the police force or for the firefighters. Something like this can happen. A Vulture Mike can come down from space specifically looking for Mark, will find him and interrupt what's happening with them. No matter what, there's nothing you can do to turn that off. Someone will arrive to interrupt their entire life at any time. So you're absolutely right. That moment of everything freezing is underlining that, no, they can't have a perfect life together.
Yeah.
And there's also a very interesting part to Anissa's conversation. Anissa following Mark on his mission to stop the kaiju attack. They talk for a moment first, and then Mark gets the call from Cecil saying there's another kaiju attack going on that he needs Mark's help with. Mark kind of takes Anissa along to show him what he's doing, and a lot of people on the ship would have died that was being attacked by the kaiju, would have died if it was just Mark on his own, but Anissa actually helps him save them, and then tells him, if the Vulturemite Empire come down and take over Earth, you can be assured we'd be able to save all lives, because we could wipe out crime, we could kill all of the villains that are on this planet, we could take them all out, and there would be no more death. Mark's still struggling with that idea. He's still going, but that takes away all human choice. And Anissa kind of trying to say to him, well, maybe humans shouldn't have the choice. If they keep killing each other, maybe they shouldn't have the choice. That's the rationale she's taking with him. And they fight again, and Anissa says it directly to him that, remember, this all started with reason. I came to you with a reasonable idea of how you actually save humans on your planet. And you fought back against me.
And it's throughout this And it's throughout this conversation that, like, we really start to see the Vulturemite Empire very much believe, they're indoctrinated, like, they believe that they are doing the right. Like, they will come and invade and take over, but it's going to be for the betterment of society, of the bugs beneath their feet. The bugs will be better off because they are in charge.
Exactly.
And she makes some compelling arguments. Don't get me wrong. Yep. Like, no crime, no disease, no famine, things like that. And you're like, that does sound good. Oh, but wait, you have these supreme overlords above you.
Who could easily choose that you're one of the bad guys, you're one of the villains, we will just kill you. Yes, absolutely. That is always the problem, yeah.
It is. It's an interesting bit, because then you get, like, we are, just as we get building this conversation, you do get the kaiju attack. And I have to admit, I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was just it's a fun bit where, like, yeah, kaijus are attacking, this is what needs to go on, so Mark has to go. He's like, would you mind coming, we finish the conversation as we go?
Yeah.
But you see her power. You see Anissa's kind of, like, power up, like, that she's not holding back on, because Mark gives the kaiju monster a couple of beatings. Mm-hmm. It kind of doesn't go down. She just go like a bullet through the kaiju's skull and out the other side. And when she stops, another cool thing on the animation here, when she pulls her brakes and when she's flying, all the blood flies forward.
Very cool.
And I was like, that would be almost like, if Superman flew through someone and then stops and, like, at high speed, all that blood is going to go off his suit, so it's fine. Superman does kill it, okay.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the thing. Mark doesn't kill. We've heard that in the conversation with him and his father. The last time they fought against Vulturemites, Mark cannot kill. He cannot go and kill anybody, even the kaiju that's attacking the ship here. That is instantly what Anissa goes for. She instantly goes for, as you say, the bullet to the brain, which is her going directly through the brain of the kaiju, killing it, saving the people. Her ultimate goal is to save the people. It doesn't matter whether she kills this creature or not. But Mark can't do that, which is, again, part of his central character, right?
Yeah. It's not in the whole, I think that the tired bit where, like, so Batman doesn't kill. They, like, Batman doesn't kill because it's like, it's, I don't want to say it's a code. It's an oath to uphold, like, that type of thing. I don't know what. Creed. His creed is not to kill. Batman's creed is not to kill.
Yeah, I always find this really interesting that people are surprised at that. But remember, Batman was created by his parents being murdered by someone on the street. Yeah. That's why he has a code not to kill, right? I know Batman has killed in comics. Totally understandable. He's killed in movies before, but that's the reason why he doesn't kill, because his parents got murdered, right?
Exactly.
Understandable, right? Mark has this code that he won't kill because his father's a murderer in his mind. Yeah, so he doesn't want to become like Nolan. So he won't murder. That's why he has his code. And Anissa, again, not understanding why he makes these decisions. I think there's a great moment when we're hearing in the background Cecil and Donald are trying to control this in some way, because the idea of having two Viltrumites fight over another city and kill millions of people, just like happened last season with Nolan and Mark, is absolutely horrible to them. They're talking about this, you know, this idea that Mark can't possibly beat her. I think they say he only has an 18% chance that Mark could beat her. And interestingly, I think Anissa says there's only an 18% chance that the human civilization will survive past 200 years. So there's this irony there that there's this 18% chance that of things happening. But they're trying to do anything they can to help Mark, and there's even a point when Cecil goes, just say the words, say you will do what you need to do to prepare the planet for the arrival of the Viltrumites. You tell them that, and then while they're gone and we're waiting for them to come back, we'll work out a plan to take care of them. We can't do it right now. She's on the planet right now. You need to get her off. And Mark still refuses. Mark still says no, because again, he doesn't want to be Nolan. He doesn't want to be Omni-Man. He doesn't want to be the worst parts of his father.
Yeah. And that continues. That's always been the theme throughout this season, if you will. Like, and I think it also builds. Yeah, when your father is essentially Space Hitler, or a version of Space Hitler, you don't.
He's a space Nazi.
He's a space Nazi.
I think General Krieg is probably Space Hitler.
Yeah, that's probably it. But yeah, that's a better way to put it. So, your dad is Gruber. No,
maybe
Hans Gruber.
Probably not Hans Gruber.
Yeah, not Hans Gruber, but especially unless it's Nakatomi Plaza. But we're getting off. Yeah. We're getting completely off the rails there. And look, it ends well. Like they beat each other up, but she says she's going to leave, and she does. And that's, for me, it puts the flag and pin back into this discussion point, if you will. Because
very specifically, she says she's leaving because Mark says, kill me.
Yeah.
And she says, that's not my job. I'm not here to kill you. But there is somebody else that will be coming. And when they come to this planet, they will kill you, because that will be their job.
Yeah.
I presume that's General Krieg.
That's like, the way
that was
I
the threat
it.
That he made.
Yeah. Again, for me, this is, it's taking its time. And I know I'm trying to rush the storyline. I don't want to rush it. I think I want to rush the storyline because I know where I think it goes.
Okay.
I think they're kind of condensing certain things and expanding others. So I'm like, I think I know where you're going to go next in season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, let's get the ball rolling. But in a page to screen adaptation, this is very true to the original, but also updated narratively and updated from a dialogue perspective to give it more gravitas in line with the show. And it works. In terms of how they portray this, how they set it up, and then how they end it, going, well, no, it's not my job, and I'm going back to my space prison. And you better watch out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, do they do this in the first kind of couple of episodes of season 3?
Maybe. There's one last beat with Anissa when she goes back to General Krieg, and we see it in the post-credit, where poor little Alan the alien is flying past outside after she makes her report to General Krieg, and Anissa goes out and fights against him. We all remember last time when Alan was up against Viltrumites, and well, lost everything, including an eye. But here's Alan pretty much able to fight back against Anissa. She's able to feel pain. She bleeds from a punch from Alan the alien. That's quite a big thing. We've only seen Viltrumite versus Viltrumite causing that kind of pain when we saw the fight between Nolan and the Viltrumites and Mark and the Viltrumites. So, so Alan has now got a lot more power than even he thought he had.
Yeah. And I think that, that like, it just can only be, he can only get stronger now, it seems. So, like, the more he damage he takes, the stronger he becomes.
Kind of Hulk, maybe, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. I'm not sure about that. I just know from the conversation that we had earlier on when Alan came back, it was that he was able to survive and was able to come back by being left to his own devices. So definitely he's got some kind of healing. But he decides to play it off and decides to get knocked out or pretend to get knocked out by Anissa. So he's taken into their custody, and we see a little opening of Alan's eye as he, and a little smile from him as he gets taken into their custody.
Yes. And hopefully that will continue into the next episode now.
Yeah, exactly. Final part of this kind of section, I suppose, is the breakup of Amber and Mark. And wow, that was a powerful line from Amber, where she's telling Mark why they need to break up, that when she's with him, she isn't anything. She's only either someone to threaten for people that are threatening Mark, or someone for him to save, because they can always be interrupted and they have to break up. There's no chance they can possibly stay together. I thought this was really well done. This is really quite emotional. It's quite a good twist, I suppose, on this kind of relationship issue with a human and a superhero being together.
It harkens back to me the Mary Jane Watson, MJ, kind of Peter Parker, Spider-Man kind of piece. Now, it's always that when you have a normie, a human, living and partnering with a superhero, you inevitably get some form of this conversation, which is, I'll either, like the Lois Lane to the Clark Kent Superman, where back in the day, they were always just the damsel in distress. Yeah. That was it. That was their secondary job in the overall story. They all had jobs, for example. MJ was a model. Lois Lane was a world-class Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. But they, I'll say MJ went on to become a CEO of many things. But anyway, just I'm not putting her just down as a model. But it's that when you have a human who is living or in love or in a relationship with a superhero, that is that. That's what they become. They become the person that will be put in danger and jeopardy.
Yeah.
And a lot, there's different ways that these have been attached. So it's like, well, do you break up with the person? Do you go No Way Home and essentially just wipe everyone's memory? Do you, all of these different types of things. This breakup here, it harkens back to all those kind of conversations. And again, it's just, it's done in a way where you see there is no right answer. Well, I suppose in terms of their breakup, there is.
Yeah.
But there's no soft answer. There's no nice answer for this. This is the inevitable that they must go through.
Yes. Yes. But it's done really well here. Really, really liked it. And I think, again, underlying the point that, you know, Mark doesn't really have a secret identity very much. A lot of people have seen who Mark is. You know, he does seem to put on the invincible outfit quite a lot, which has a mask attached to it, but a lot of people know. So if they know him, they know who his mom is, they know who his brother is, they know who his girlfriend is, they know who his friends are. So they will all be threatened. That's the reason why in the Marvel Comics universe, most superheroes have secret identities. In the DC universe, most superheroes have secret identities. And here's the problem. Here's the reason why. If people find out your secret identity, if people find out who you are, you have loads of people around you that could be threatened and killed. And people can make you do what they want you to do by threatening your loved ones. So it's a really well done piece. And I do think the conversation itself that happens between Mark and Amber is something that I haven't seen very often in comics. Part of the reason, Chris, and you know, you're explaining it there a little bit, but that you were kind of explaining it more in the history of the characters over 50 years. Being completely honest, Lois Lane was created as a damsel in distress for Superman for the first 20 years of comic books. Same thing with MJ. She was created as a damsel in distress for comic books because they were just very simple. Write the 20-page comic, throw it out there. It's sold for 10 cents. Off it goes. Over the years, those characters have been developed quite considerably and have not just been damsels in distress. They have been characters that have great story arcs of their own. Here it's Amber saying, I am not going to be that damsel in distress for you. It's having that conversation out loud rather than it just being written in a different way, the character being written in a different way. So I thought it was really well handled and something different for this show. She does a great job of this kind of stuff.
No, I agree.
Good stuff. I think that's probably it for Mark's day off. I don't think he's going to be taking another day off anytime soon.
I don't think he'll have time to.
No, I don't think so.
Things are going to get busy, especially with that last phone call.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's kind of wrap up the episode with the final point, because there's a couple other things that are going on. It's the penultimate episode, and it is, as we've said before, Invincible stuffed quite heavily with lots and lots of things going on. So let's talk quickly about what's happening with the Guardians.
Yeah, so we still have a broken Immortal, mm-hmm. and we have a really, really emotion-filled conversation here between the Immortal and Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very much like the Immortal needs a break. He's like done. It's like I've been doing this for hundreds of years. I need time off. I need to finish. And you have Cecil going, no, you can take a break, but you're coming back. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not over. And the Immortal going, no, it's over. We're done. Like, I can't do this anymore. I'm broken.
Yes.
This death of Kate has broken me. Mm-hmm. And it, you see him kind of, where he's going. He's going home, wherever that is. Is it ancient Egypt? Is it a cave? I'm hoping we get one or two nice, fun Easter eggs.
Yeah,
it is just, cool. it's a scene where he's just like, yeah. Like, I need a break. After what we saw in the last episode where he did kind of bury Kate, and that's the emotional break that he had.
Yes, absolutely. But he also is blaming himself for almost losing the world to the Sequids because he didn't trust Invincible.
Yep.
So he's not just saying the loss of Duplicate. He's also concerned about his leadership abilities as well at this stage because he feels like he is totally broken. So, but also we see a little bit of a moment between Monster Girl and Robot, who are arguing after he's trying to fix her de-aging problem again. So, so still having arguments between the two of them. They only went out on one date last season, right? So, and he's here trying to tell her that he's the resolution to everything that's going on with her, right? So. It does seem like a really concerning issue that if every time she changes into her her monster form that she gets younger every single time and she's joined a superhero team.
Yep.
Like, you kind of think maybe sit at home, reserve turning into a monster for, you know, really special occasions, maybe once a year.
and then you can stay in your form. Stay
or just stay in your form, but just in case you have to once in a while turn into a monster. Then that's fine. Do it once a year. You age up a year, you lose a year, you know, that kind of thing. You know, Christmas time every year, that's the one time I turn into a monster. But she's joined the superhero team where probably two or three times a week she will have to turn into a monster to battle all the bad guys that are coming after them. So it's probably a bad decision for her. And I can imagine, her turning into a baby at some point in the future if she doesn't work out a way around this problem.
Yeah.
But she's not willing to let Robot sort it out for her.
No, because he's a man who went on one date with her trying to solve all of her problems.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's I'm interested to see how they kind of expand this relationship out and where this does go, but let's see.
Absolutely. I just also want to just give a nod to the conversation that's going on between Bulletproof and Black Samson, who are looking down on all the things that are going wrong with the team. Bulletproof joined the team last season. And, you know, I always say that the Guardians of the Globe, you don't really get much of them. You get kind of these side stories, 5 minutes an episode, where you kind of sort of know some of them. But you don't really know their backstories. Bulletproof only came in towards the end of last season. We've seen him kind of in the background as a character. And here he is racing the team in front of Black Samson, telling them, you know, you've got one guy who created himself from DNA of another coworker, so he can date another coworker. You've got Immortal, who's going through massive issues at the moment. You've got Rex, who just had a bullet to the head. You know, he's kind of criticizing every single member of the team. And then I love his gag on Black Samson, where he's going, you've got a guy called Black Samson who named himself after Samson, who had hair. That was his big thing. He had hair to indicate how powerful he was, and you're bald. So love that little gag. And Black Samson's reply to him, of course, saying, well, I picked it when I had hair.
Yeah.
But importantly, Black Samson saying, really, it's not about the flaws of the group. You can pick out flaws in any group at all. It's when we all get together as a group that we become powerful, effectively.
And so, they're a family.
So I did like that. And they're a family. Yeah, exactly.
It's always the thing we always hear, like it's in the Avengers, the Justice League. It's always about being a family, a group. Like, they're there for each other. And that's where we're getting to with the GDA in this long story. Although Mark's really definitely not a part of them.
No, he's not.
Not at all. I think that kind of starts to wrap up a majority of it. Any other notes for this episode?
I guess just quickly, Angstrom Levy is back.
Yep.
And he's with Debbie and with Oliver at home in Mark's house, and he's got them trapped there. That's a pretty big cliffhanger to leave the episode on.
Yeah, we saw him slowly walking through the dimensions last episode. He finally arrived. It was a bit of a journey. It took us a whole 45 minutes. I'm glad they started the season with this big bad. They're going to end the season with this big bad. And I'm like, makes it, it thematically makes sense.
Absolutely.
It's his whole thing is the multiverse. Will we get to see Invincible in the multiverse? Like, are we going to see 20 different versions? Again, we talked about Bulletproof there. Bulletproof was just wearing a different version of an outfit that was offered to Mark.
That's right.
Are we going to see different hundreds of thousands of, it's going to be Mark v. Mark v. Mark v. Mark. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what we get.
It'll be interesting to see how Angstrom Levy thinks he's going to take down Mark next week, because he's just pissed him off just after breaking up with his girlfriend as well. It's probably not a good time to piss off Mark, right?
No, never.
A couple of just quick little notes that were in the episode as well. We talked about Debbie's boss, Paul, giving her a bottle of wine a couple of weeks ago, and that seemed like he was coming on to her. This time he does ask her for a date.
Yeah.
If she gets away from Angstrom Levy, I guess she might go on that date in the future. And then one that I thought was quite interesting and definitely underlined repeatedly, April, the babysitter for Oliver, or the childcare for Oliver, repeatedly says he's learning faster than any kid she's ever thought. She tells Debbie and then tells Mark that Oliver is learning very, very quickly, quicker than most kids on Earth. So I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, no, and again, that's his Thraxian DNA kind of coming out. So it'd be interesting to see where and if, how quickly they age him. Is he going to catch up? Are we going to come back in season 3 and he's a 15-year-old boy?
Potentially. Yeah. I'm also, you know, she does also reference Mark didn't get his powers until he... until the start of season 1, so he was about 16, wasn't he, in season 1? And she's saying that the advanced learning abilities of Oliver indicate that potentially he'll get his Viltrumite powers much earlier than Mark did. So that could be interesting. As we said before, it could be like Jack-Jack from The Incredibles, having all of the superpowers as a baby. It could be quite interesting.
Yeah, hopefully.
Excellent. Any notes, Chris, or what did you think of the episode overall?
Overall, I absolutely love this. Again, I know I haven't kind of marked down many of the episodes at all this season, but that's for me just because it's delivering on everything I wanted and more. Some of the most, we talked about some of the most emotional writing and dialogue you've seen in a while, delivered with some great fight scenes. So I'm looking to see how they move forward and top this. And I think they will. I think everything so far is showing me that they have the skills, and this, the animation house, the writing staff, the team, everything is kind of building towards season three is just going to be even more epic than season two. Mm. And we've still got one more episode of season two. And I'm like, oh, what can you do to top this? But yeah, overall, absolutely loved it.
Excellent. Yeah, I think they're going to have to top it in the last episode as well, because they do tend to end their seasons on big cliffhangers and big moments. So I think next week's going to be a very, very big episode. Yeah, I love this. As you say, Chris, the emotional beats, the moments that we had, specifically that moment with Donald and Rick, I thought was fantastically observed, really well written. And the breakup of Mark and Amber, everything that came before that is stuff that we've kind of seen before with Viltrumites versus Mark, or Viltrumites trying to convince Mark to join their side. We've kind of seen it before. I like the twist of them helping him rather than just beating him to a pulp like his dad did. They're actually helping out Mark and showing that actually the Viltrumite Empire could be saving lives on Earth if they just bent the knee, you know? And so I like that conversation, but it leading to the breakup of Amber and Mark for very serious reasons, for reasons that they can't go against, that just makes sense to both of them that this can't continue. I thought was really well done. Yeah, excellent episode. Really looking forward to the finale next week as well.
Good stuff.
Yes, let's go over and hear some feedback from our wonderful fellow Guardians on last week's episode, on episode 6. First up, we got an email in from Coffee and Vodka, who says, "Greetings, fellow Sequid sequestering defenders. This was a nice, if messy, mix of heroics and the more humanizing elements of really weird circumstances. Though I'm sorry to see Kate go, one of my favorite characters, it's good we only ended up with a single fatality. Rex surviving an up-close headshot is a bit of a stretch, but was more than balanced by Mark and Amber's relationship issues, and the parallels of his dear old dad never being there for him. The Immortal versus Alan tussle seemed to show that Alan could have easily beaten him, should it have come to it. It'll be interesting to see just how powerful he's become. So many other good things packed in this. Donald's dilemma, the return of Nolan and Angstrom, purple baby parenting issues, and more. There's enough here to fuel many more seasons, which I hope is what's to happen. Five half-headed interior decorators, nanny no-nos, and Amber alerts out of 5. Peace and take care, Coffee and Vodka."
Thanks, Coffee and Vodka. I like the Amber alerts. Should have
That's
used
pretty
that.
Good, yeah.
For any of our non-US-based kind of listeners, Amber alerts are kind of like these warnings that go out to everyone's phone when there's obviously a child missing or like other things, but usually there's an Amber alert sent to, and you're like, hostage in situation in your area, watch out, or like a child is missing, watch out, and it's sent to everyone's phone like an SMS. It's in the US, it's a US kind of system.
We get Amber alerts for high winds in Ireland.
Exactly. Chris. Slightly different.
very different. Good job, I like that. Thanks Coffee and Vodka. Interesting that some of the things that Coffee and Vodka was mentioning here play out in this episode. We get to see a bit more of Alan's power in this episode, for example, and we get much more of Mark and Amber's relationship issues, and of course Donald's issues coming to the surface in this episode as well. So that's quite cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, I guess the return of Angstrom is going to be dealt with in next episode.
Yeah, no, and only time can tell, but I hopefully, like you said, usually they end on quite a high in a cliffhanger, so let's see where they leave us with the end of this season.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Coffee and Vodka.
Thanks, Coffee and Vodka.
We also got an email from Meryl Smith who had this to say. "So, unfortunately, dying in this series is no longer the worst thing that can happen to you in the series. Surviving is much worse. Considering that if you survive it, you'll have to deal with the psychological trauma of it, healing physically and putting yourself back in the position to repeat the process again. Maybe Rex will get a metal plate in his head after this incident to prevent this from happening."
Yeah.
"He is literally the character I can see going through this encounter and coming out of it okay-ish. Prepare the DNR paper because Mark and Amber's relationship is on life support at this point. The writers did too good of a job at breaking them up last season, but made the mistake of putting them back together, and now they're stuck in a limbo mode. They also put Amber in a passive mode, which makes some of the fire that the character had at the beginning and makes her a less dynamic character than she was before. Looking forward to the old Hannibal Lecter meeting with an old friend for dinner, aka the eventual confrontation. Also, Cecil trying to turn Oliver into his own personal Homelander, i.e. raising a superpowered baby in a lab, it'll never end well.
Nice nod to the boys there.
Yes, well done. It took me a second. I was like, wait, what? He did offer that. He said he'd even put clouds on the walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, clouds on the ceilings. Yep. That's the only concession he'd make to having a baby in the GDA. But yeah, that doesn't end well, especially in these universes that Prime Video have access to. that's the way I'll call it. That's the boys and Invincible, of course. Very good, great stuff. Thanks so much for the feedback, Meryl.
Yep, thanks so much, Meryl.
And I think you are totally right. Yeah, the psychological trauma of surviving. Does seem to be quite an awful experience for those who live as opposed to those who die. Yeah. So I think, you know, the whole thing about the superhero comics that Robert Kirkman created is that he is making a commentary on the big MCU characters and the big DC characters who are well known to never die. They always will come back from a death, no matter how preposterous it is. So him dealing with the trauma of coming back to life after being killed makes total sense for Robert Kirkman in the Invincible comics, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Great stuff. Thanks so much, Meryl.
Yep, thanks, Meryl.
Finally, over on Facebook, Dr. Bob Phillips says, this show is like the best dish of Singapore noodles ever. A solid and tasty core story soaked in satirical sauce and enough variety of nuggets of other tales, borrowing tropes from every property in the superhero verse to tantalize and satisfy. This week's bowl finished with a slightly unexpected whole chili in the end credits, though. Can't wait for next week. Best tasty bit was the Amber Eve Mark Irish conversation piece, closely followed by the misnaming of Colin as Oliver. Very good. That was just in case you didn't hear Dr. Bob's feedback last week. He was saying that they would call Mark's baby brother Colin and pronounce it Colin. Instead, they've called him Colin, but pronounced it Oliver is his theory there.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's wrong,
I like
but it's
it.
Fair.
I like it.
Thanks, Dr. Bob.
Great stuff. Thanks, Dr. Bob. Thanks, everybody, for your feedback. Please keep sending it in to us. Email us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com or pop on over to our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TVPodcastIndustries. There's a spoiler post up there every week as the episodes come out for you to leave your thoughts or discuss amongst yourselves if you have theories about what could be happening coming up on the next season of Invincible. I'm questioning what we're going to do next week, Chris, because next week is the finale of Invincible. And we'll have it out before anybody's seen it. So we won't have feedback. Will we do a wrap-up podcast of just feedback after the episodes come out?
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, start putting your thoughts together for all the episodes so far, part one and part two. Watch the end, the final, and then send us an old email to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com with your thoughts. And we'll wrap them all together into a quick kind of top-line thoughts where we think where we think it's going in season 3, and we'll just listen and respond back to your feedback.
Yes, I might just leave it to your feedback. You give us your thoughts.
Yeah.
I have no thoughts of where it's going to go in season 3, and if Chris tells us where it's going to go in season 3, he'll be spoiling the comic.
So. No, I never use my knowledge for evil.
I love it.
Rarely use my knowledge for evil.
You rarely, Chris. Exactly. Thanks so much, though. We will be back next week with our chat about Invincible Season 2, the finale, Episode 8. I thought you were stronger.
So, thank you so much. And don't forget, if you are enjoying this type of animation or just any type of animation in general, don't forget we're covering the final season of Star Wars The Bad Batch. It's a very different type of show at the moment. So we get that on our feed, and then we already talked about it, Shogun, it's there, it's epic, it's an event, it's an event series, and it's an epic event series. The boys are covering that as well, so make sure you check that out if you're enjoying it. But for now, thank you so much for joining us. Keep watching, keep listening, and keep being invincible. Bye.
Bye.